start out with a convention that was held in Nome, and at the end of, I guess it was at the beginning of statehood, to determine who the bar was going to contribute to the judicial council. Can you just tell me the surrounding events to that convention? What was happening with the bar?
I frankly don't remember it very well. And I'm not sure that there was a convention in Nome. I think there was just a meeting of the Board of Governors. Mm-hmm. And I was on the Board of Governors at that time. I can't remember all of the members, but I know Judge Vonderheit was on it. I remember Bob Parrish, I think, was on it. I think Bob McNeely from Fairbanks.
Bill Stump?
Bill Stump. I can't remember who the other Anchorage members were. I was obviously one of them. I think Bob... No, if Stump was on it, Jernberg wouldn't have been on. Maybe Jernberg was on, but I'm not certain of that. Basically, you know, we were trying to figure out who should go on the judicial council. There were some, obviously, necessarily, philosophical differences.
What were some of them?
Well, basically, the primary philosophical differences that have affected the Anchorage Bar are in two fields. One is the criminal defense field, and whether people would be hard, or judges would be hard or difficult in that area. And the second major philosophical difference dealt with plaintiffs' negligence work as opposed to insurance defense work. I suppose to a certain extent you can divide the categorization into conservative or liberal, but they were really the major philosophical issues. I know that Mr. Parrish, for example, at that time was doing a great deal of tort work on behalf of plaintiffs. The gentlemen from Southeastern have traditionally been very conservative. And I don't know that we came to any necessary judgments. At least I can't recall any. I know that the arguments went on for some period of time. And I suppose if you look at the first judicial council, you might be able to determine whether we came to that agreement or not, but I don't remember now who was on the first judicial council.
I think Ernie Bailey was on it.
He would have been the Southeastern guy.
Right. Harold Stringer was first nominated from Anchorage, I think. And then it was withdrawn, and maybe you can tell me why that happened.
Well, that would have been after the Stringer disbarment proceeding, and maybe there was some residual opposition because of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't specifically recall that.
But weren't most people in favor, not in favor of Stringer's disbarment? I mean, they would have felt he was unjustly disbarred, so it wouldn't have been a reason.
Well, of course, the proceeding had long been over by then, because the proceeding was in 54, and this would have been 5 years later.
Yeah.
But I don't know whether there was any residual dissatisfaction with that Mr. Stringer in his capacity as a Republican National Committee man had participated in putting Judge McCary on the bench, and perhaps it was as a result of that there was some substantial opposition to McGarry.
Yeah.
But Stringer, as my recollection is, left the state soon after that. But I can't specifically recall what the opposition to Mr. Stringer was. If I had to guess, I would guess it would be the result of McCary.
From the results of the Judicial Council, looking at the first nominees to the court system, do you think they turned it out conservative or liberal?
Well, you know, that is a long, drawn-out process. The first Supreme Court, I guess, was Nesbitt, Arend, and
Diamond.
Okay, that's geographical distribution, which, you know, is something that we always endeavor to achieve, both in the judicial system and in the legislature. Geographic distribution obviously doesn't work if half the people live in Anchorage, but we always endeavor to achieve it. So you have a southeastern Diamond, Nesbitt, Arend. Arend, in my experience, was relatively conservative. Diamond was certainly conservative. And Nesbitt, in his day, had been a great liberal, but my daughter's a freshman at Williams and wants a job. Okay, let's move on. I'm not sure, you know, in retrospect, I think there are persons other than the Judicial Council, although they submitted the names, who really made the determination as to the composition of the first court system. Well, obviously, Governor Egan made the selections, and he was influenced to a certain extent by people around him, including the first Attorney General, who was John Rader. But the council, of course, submitted the names, and I think in those days when we first started, they'd always submit a whole bunch of names to give the governor a wide choice. So that's all I can say about that. I haven't studied the first Superior Court judges. But I know, for example, that Rader talked to Governor Egan about making Nesbitt Chief Justice. Because Rader and I were partners at the time.
Right. Because he was from Anchorage? Because there were a greater number of lawyers in Anchorage? Or?
No, I think that the choice was made primarily on philosophical bent more than on a geographic distribution.
What was the philosophical bent that you thought Nesbitt had, or that it was thought Nesbitt
had? It was certainly more liberal than either Arend or Diamond. Okay. And of course, Rader had been a great friend of Nesbitt's. They had practiced law together at one time. We certainly knew him in Anchorage. He probably knew him better than the others, too.
Mm-hmm. In 1959, the bar had an opportunity to influence the court, or influence who was going to be on the court, I would think. In the prior years, in the 50s, they really didn't. They had McCary here, and they had...
Well, we had no control over it at all in the past, because it was a presidential appointment, and it was often done on a, well, it was done on a straight political basis, just like all U.S. district judges.
Right. Was there an effort to have more input, the bar have more input into who the judges were? I mean, were there any kind of campaigns or...
Well, I mean, the bar was so small that, you know, we used to meet every Saturday, and the newest member had to bring a jug of booze, and we had meetings on whether we wanted McCary in or not, and we voted that we didn't want him, but it didn't make any difference.
Did the bar have meetings on who they wanted as their first Supreme Court, or people they wanted to be judges?
Well, there was certainly a certain amount of lobbying activity. There always is. And I'm sure that people called Governor Egan, and I'm sure that people called the members of the Judicial Council. I mean, if you don't think that's happened, you're living in a vacuum.
Oh, no, I think it does, but I want to identify who the factions were. I think that's...
Well, I've indicated that to you.
The conservatives versus the liberals.
In a broad sense.
In a broad sense. Were it city? Can you do it geographically, say that Juneau, where the people in Southeastern were the conservatives, and people in Anchorage and Fairbanks were more liberal?
Well, I think that's true, sure. I think that's for certain. But you also had what I considered to be that faction which was active in criminal defense work, and that faction which was active in insurance defense work. And both of them were operating.
Who were some of the people who were lobbying?
Well, it just depended on what kind of practice you had. So Parrish, you know, would do some criminal defense work, and he'd do some negligence plaintiff's work. In Anchorage, because it was a bigger community, it was a lot more apparent. But if you get into Ketchikan, where you got 10 lawyers, it's pretty tough, you know. They're all conservative, and they're, you know, it's only the new kid on the block that takes on any plaintiff's negligence cases. But in Anchorage, there was a relative division. You know, Hughes, Thorsness, Davis, Renfrew, and Hughes had been, you know, big insurance defense lawyers. They were then, they are now. The old Plummer Delaney Wiles firm was the same thing. And they were probably the ones that were the biggest ones on that side of the fence. The plaintiff's lawyers varied. When the new guys came in, you know, they'd file the big plaintiff's negligence cases, and there weren't experts in the field like, you know, theoretically Bernie Kelly and Ames Luce are now. But we all did some negligence work, and we all did some criminal defense work. And but the difference was mainly between those firms that represented, that did the insurance defense work, and sort of the rest of the bar.
When the new court came in, when the new Supreme Court came in, did the bar feel that they had a receptive, or that they had the kind of court they wanted?
Well, I think they were more pleased with the fact that they could get a case heard, you know, as opposed to having to wait 4 or 5 or 6 years. You could go in and, you know, there was a substantial amount of testing of the court in various cases, and constant conversation about whether they were in fact very liberal or very conservative. But in any event, you know, I think that the bar as a whole was happy with the result.
What precipitated the court bar fight?
Well, I'm sure there are all kinds of different perceptions of that. My own perception, as in most things, is slightly different than others. But in the beginning, it became an argument as to who ultimately had control of the bar. In other words, was it did the court system have control, or did the courts have control of the bar? Was the bar an independent body which operated with rules? And the court's control over it was relatively small. That that's what started the fight. There were numerous efforts to reconcile it. It's like the Falklands dispute. There are all kinds of efforts, but it's a question of sovereignty I think the Justice Nesbitt, who I had known and respected, became somewhat arrogant about his treatment of the bar. And some of that was perhaps perceived and some of it was real, but in any event, he just in substance told them that insofar as your disciplinary proceedings are concerned, not only are we going to run them, but we can overrule you, we're going to make the rules, and you can all go to heck. And so that was the beginning of the fight. It subsequently became a cause célèbre because of the McKay decision, under the terms of which, and you can read the case, McKay was disbarred. McKay had a lot of money, and so he then organized the fight. And it was really his efforts to get back into the bar that created the fight. Once he decided, he's always got to be a money man, but once he decided to spend the money to show the court that they shouldn't have done what he did, what they did. Well, he organized a group and ran ads and defeated Arend in his bid for re-election. Arend soon thereafter passed away. But it was McKay's money and effort that did it. And of course, in a sense, this increased the bitterness between the bar and the bench very substantially, because suddenly the bar was saying, we're going to be able to control the public vote on whether you're retained or not. And there have been very few successful fights to remove a judge since then. Every once in a while, a political candidate will attack the court, as they did in the last election. But as a matter of fact, if the lawyers recommend the removal of a judge, and this happened in Southeastern, why, the people get up in arms and retain them.
Why? Why did that happen?
Because they don't like lawyers. But in the big bar fight, and I can't remember which year it was, when was it?
63-5.
And in that fight, you know, feelings ran extraordinarily high. The bar got together to oppose Arend's retention, and he did lose the election. There were ads run, which in some instances were untrue, but nevertheless...
Did the bar run the ads, or did McKay run the ads?
Well, the bar didn't run the ads. McKay ran the ads through a variety of sources.
What were some of the sources?
Clients, people on the street, the barber at the Western, which didn't make any difference.
Did the bar ever place ads?
I don't believe so. I think the bar passed resolutions, and I think that the bar acted in that fashion, but it's not my recollection that they ever ran any ads as such.
How did McKay get the bar so involved? I've never heard before that McKay was the one behind. I've heard the case, that
Well, I mean, he was fighting for his life, and he was had been disbarred by the court, and he was going to... How did he do it? Money, effort, and time.
But wasn't the bar behind him? Wasn't the Board of Governors behind McKay? Didn't they also agree that the court shouldn't be writing the rules of the bar for them?
Yeah, but the focus of the fight was McKay. I mean, he became the focus of the fight, in my perception. Now, others may disagree, but that's my perception. I went to his office one time and he showed me where he had gotten, you know, 10 lawyers to write 15 letters each, I mean, to each of 15 clients. He had the tally cards as to who had been written and who had participated in writing, and he had them on a big sheet of paper.
So he coordinated the effort. What about Joe Ball? How did Joe Ball get involved?
Well, in this process, did we end up hiring Joe Ball? Yeah, okay, the bar, Nesbitt hired some big lawyer from D.C., and so we hired a big lawyer from D.C. I can't remember who Nesbitt hired, but it was some big wheel. And that's how Ball got involved.
So did it end up being confrontation between the court and the bar, and not between McKay and the court?
Well, yeah, we're talking about, you know, the outward confrontation, the surface confrontation was between the bar and the court. The reason for the continuance of the confrontation and the start of the confrontation, in my opinion, was McKay. But once you get into a fight, everybody's into the fight.
Yeah. What are the circumstances surrounding the taking of funds from the bank with a gun?
Well, you ask Mr. Cremo about that. He was the attorney for the bank.
He won't be taped.
He won't be taped. I don't really know.
We'll ask him up. Did the bar think that Harry Ahrens was to blame for what was happening? What was their perception of Harry Ahrens?
Well, I thought Harry Ahrens was just a nice guy. No, I don't think that the bar thought that Harry Ahrens was the cause of what was happening. The bar thought that Nesbitt was the cause of what was happening. And the fight was between Nesbitt and the bar. But Ahrens is the guy who happened to get caught up and have an election come up. You know, it's like Ford getting caught up in Watergate. So he takes the rap for it.
What finally made conditions cool down between the court and the bar, or have they? Or?
Oh, well, long time has passed. Different people, different approaches. The McKay matter, you know, somehow or other McKay got readmitted through the federal court. I don't know how he finally did that, but he did. Different personalities, plus an obvious recognition that rather than the court and the bar fight, the bench and the bar fight, they ought to get together. They've got enough problems otherwise than to have to fight each other. I mean, they've got the legislative fights, they've got the executive branch, and they've got that great public out there who really doesn't think a hell of a lot of them anyway, and if they continue to fight, they're going to lose what little ground they have. And that's my view as to what happened.
Did it help to get Ahrens off? Did the bar feel like they'd been vindicated?
No, I don't think that was just, you know, that was early, that was one of the battles in the war, So Aaron got beat and the bar won that fight, but there were a hell of a lot of wars after that, primarily in name-calling, resolution-passing, and endeavoring to influence the public. And then, of course, you know, whether you care to admit it or not, the expansion of the court from 3 to 5 probably helped in that. And then new people on the court.
Bill Nesbitt coming down?
Well, Bill Nesbitt coming down, Rabinowitz going on, Boney going on. different attorney general, different approaches. Although the attorney general, I don't think, was into the bar fight very much. I think the state executive branch stayed out of it. But in any event, a different attitude by the bench and a different attitude by the bar.